The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
News Talk 106.3 KMED.
We'll do some emails of the day sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson at Central Point Family Dentistry. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com, which is right next to the Mazatlan Mexican restaurant, Freeman Way. While you wait, crowns available. And if you don't have dental insurance, that's the phrase I was looking for. Talk to Dr. Steve because they have a dental plan there, which works a lot like dental insurance, but pays better benefits, and a very reasonable cost. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com, okay? Randy in Ashland writes me, oddly enough, about the Fontana commercials. Bill, your line in one of the Fontana commercials, you don't trust the post office? Actually, not so much. Fontana commercials are the best of the best on KMED. You drive the product home while entertaining your audience. Please compose commercials for some of your not-so-entertaining advertisers like Pfizer. Their commercials are agonizing. Thank you, Randy. I appreciate you watching and listening, okay? Darren from Medford writes me, Bill, we were talking a lot about plastics and the problems with plastics in the environment. The Merck, Jeff Merkley, of course, is working to end one-use or single-use plastics. Says, Bill, the problem with plastics is that there's not a way to make money by recycling plastic. Once someone can figure out what to do with it, it will become valuable and we won't have a floating state-sized plastic island in the ocean. There was a place up in Brooks, Oregon, that was turning plastics back into oil and fuel. Unfortunately, they went out of business. Interesting take on that, Darren. Thank you for that. And let's see. Jeff writes this morning, Bill, what should we do with all of our polyester leisure suits? Maybe we should gift one to Senator Merkley. Okay. Sylvie writes me this morning, the other morning, I should say, Bill, guess what else is made of plastic? Those giant drones flying over New Jersey. Rob Schmidt covered them quite a bit the other day on Newsmax. Conspiracy part, the administration and Pentagon have no idea who they're from. And I noticed Town Hall News isn't saying a word. Apparently no need for alarm. Cheers and keep up the good fight. Everyone's pretty much on the alarm at this point. Sylvie, the one thing is I'm not going to sit around and it's most likely our stuff, okay? And I was talking about the plastics in my particular winter jacket, and one of the materials in it was elastane. And Richard ends up writing me, Bill, elastane is a common name more used in Europe than America for, are you ready for this? Spandex. Spandex, lycra, and elastane are not proper names for the material, but the names are commonly used in different parts of the world. First developed in 1937, became widely used after World War II. It's used in almost all clothing, as it is an extremely versatile fabric. Your coat, you mentioned, uses spandex. Your underwear uses it. Sports clothing is a large use. It's not easily recycled, which is a negative, but the advantages of the material far outweigh the disadvantages. Richard, thank you so much for emailing Bill at BillMyersShow.com. A quick catch-up with Town Hall News, and then we're going to be talking a bit about cybersecurity and your phone with Eric Engerbretson from Action Datatel, local company here. Guess we got some more problems with the Chinese getting sporty with their cell phone. Tell you about that next.
Attention, Jackson County property owners. Get peace of mind with the new Property Recording Alert Service from your Jackson County Clerk's Office. This free service sends you same-day email alerts whenever
The Bill Myers Show on Southern Oregon's home for conservative talk. Mornings on KMED at 99.3 KBXG. Call Bill at 770-5633. That's 770-KMED. Here's Bill Meyer.
Quarter after 7. I know there's all this talk about the drones. Can't fix the drones, but we need to look at our phones again here, too. And joining me is Eric Engerbretson. Eric Engerbretson is a cybersecurity analyst, rather. I'll get this right here, Eric. Cybersecurity analyst and co-founder of Action Datatel in Southern Oregon. How are you doing this morning, Eric? Welcome back.
I'm doing great. How are you, Bill?
Doing fine. Tell me a little bit about your day job, if you don't mind. Action Datatel, is this kind of like when you need more than just McAfee antivirus? Is that kind of what you're about then?
Yeah, we're a managed IT service provider, and we provide managed IT services, obviously, to small businesses, mostly focusing on compliance-laden and security-needed businesses, such as medical and dental and professional, that kind of thing. They all have, government requirements they need to follow, and so we help them do that with security and controls and day-to-day operations.
I will certainly put your information up if people wanted to find out more. But you had dropped me a note the other day. We must have been talking about some form of a security conversation of some sort. And then you brought me some news about what's going on with our cell phones and the Chinese Communist Party. And there's a little bit more of a tight connection into that than we might otherwise think. When we're thinking that, all right, you know, you go at you're with U.S. Cellular or Verizon or T-Mobile or whatever it is, you're thinking that it's all America and nothing to worry about, but that's not true, huh?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. BleepingComputer.com reported, which is where I get a lot of news, and then I started doing some research, that the Chinese state-sponsored hackers have been in the systems of more than 8 telcos in the U.S. and dozens around the country, including AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Lumen, a.k.a. Mm-hmm. CenturyLink, for several months now. They have figured out that they believe the access was obtained through the law enforcement organization backdoor called CALIA, which is from back in the 90s. It's the Communications Assistance in Law Enforcement Act, which, you know, allows law enforcement with a warrant to be able to do PIN registers, is what they called it back then, but basically monitor phone calls and information about phone calls and text messages and data and that sort of thing.
And this is a legal wiretapping, right? That kind of thing?
Correct.
All right. Right. Now, when it comes to wiretapping, it's not like the days in which you're actually taking wires and hooking them up to terminals and putting a recorder on it. It's not like that. It's much more sophisticated now, correct?
That's very, very true. Yeah, I was back in the day in the 90s and in the early 2000s. I worked in the cell phone industry, and we would get requests from the FBI for PIN registers. And yeah, we had a wire going between our central office and the other central office in town. But not today. It's all about internet, essentially. It's networked. So there are, you know, all these systems are interconnected and connected to the internet, and there are vulnerabilities that are difficult to nail down.
All right. If you don't mind me asking, first off, I'm going to ask a little bit. I'm not an expert. I mean, I get radio stuff and radio transmission and all the various codes and codings and codecs and all that sort of stuff. But I don't exactly know how cellular networks are built and how they are connected in. Is it an internet-based system? Overall, in other words, no internet, no cell phone. Is that where we are right now? First off, and then that might help the explanations you're going to be giving me.
Yeah, pretty much today. I mean, there's still microwave connectivity and fiber direct, you know, point to point fiber. But for the most part, most of the cell sites and definitely the infrastructure is connected through internet connections, and many of them are private. But yes, it is, or virtual private networking. But yeah, they are interconnected by internet. So if we lose the internet as a one big fell swoop, yeah, there's no communications.
Oh, all right. So a single point of failure for society. What could go wrong? All right.
It's good
to know. Okay. So what is happening then? So the Chinese Communist Party then plugs in using the old law enforcement, or are they using the old law enforcement law that you were talking about from the 1990s? Or do they hack that? What are they doing right now, CCP?
Yeah, they've hacked in, probably just like hacking in through any other server network. It's a fairly complex system. I mean, we could talk about this for hours, but to simplify it and make it make sense, because it really is complicated. They are all interconnected one way or another through the internet. And so what happens is that now, these days, the law enforcement agencies have a network connection, if you will, or an internet connection that should be really, really locked down. But apparently, there were vulnerabilities or flaws that were discovered, and that's how they got in. Once in, though, the problem is that they've moved laterally throughout the network and established footholds, and which means they've had a long dwell time in the network to be able to, you know, exfiltrate, if you will, lots and lots of data. According to officials in the government, that most of the targets have been government officials, including Trump and Vance. They were hacked. Their phones were hacked. Their text messages were hacked. They believe that voice messages as well. But some of them are saying that it's a fairly limited scope. Although, you know, having said that, we've heard nothing from the companies. They haven't denied it, but they aren't really telling everybody about it either.
When you say the companies, you're speaking of the cellular providers, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, and and globally, you know, at least 8 in the U.S. and globally as well, dozens.
So all the major wireless carrier calls processing facilities are more or less tapped or hacked some ways through Chinese Communist Party, right? That's our bottom line here.
That's what it looks like. They are the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency say the hackers have persistence and are likely still in the system after months. So, yeah, Senator Wyden has proposed legislation that would force the companies to secure their networks. But there's a very, very intense process that has to take place, you know, for them to be able to do that. And it's very interesting to me because that's what we do. You know, and nothing's bulletproof. I mean, there's no silver bullet. There's no panacea of you know, protecting our cellular networks or any network for that matter. And like you said, before we came on the air, if you put your cell phone in a Faraday cage or let's say put it in a garbage can, fill it with concrete and drop it in the ocean, yeah, it's secure, but it's not very useful.
Exactly.
So there's there's a security and you know, usability continuum, and we need to be somewhere in the middle of that, maybe to the, you know, secure side of that continuum. But
now, let me ask, this may be a really dumb question that I'm going to make of you, Eric Ingebretson, and he's a cybersecurity analyst and co-founder of Action Datatel in Southern Oregon. Why would it take additional laws to kick the Chinese Communist Party out of our cellular networks right now, where they apparently have hacked in and have been living quite comfortably, living in our heads, so to speak, for a number of months here, and not much has been done? Why does it need new laws?
That's a really good question. I would say that there probably are existing laws on the books that would cover all of these companies, but they would be a mishmash of state and federal regulations and laws, you know, FCC regulations, et cetera. But I think what Wyden's probably trying to do here is to target them directly and say, you have to do this, which is, you know, I'm a little bit wary of new laws. I think maybe if they're going to do that, they should replace about 5 or 6 other laws with the one that they're going to propose for this. But that's probably what's happening, because they need to be seen to be doing something. And they did have a meeting last week. Senators were briefed on Wednesday about what's going on with this hack and the persistence in the network. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, ultimately it's going to be up to all these companies to seriously lock down their networks. And first they got to kick them out and figure out how they, you know, exactly how they got in. And a lot of the I read the document that they sent out that the Cybersecurity Infrastructure and Security Agency sent out for guidance. It's enhanced visibility and hardening guidance for the infrastructure. And it's very comprehensive, but, you know, it's not something they can just do overnight.
Is there a case to be made where, and maybe they already is, it already is being done, but should all of this, these major communication arteries, should they be on the public internet, or should they not be on almost like a separate internet, which would be easier to harden, or would that just be too difficult to do at this point? We're all plugging into, you know, the main spigot, so to speak. What would you say, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, there are certain parts of it are definitely private now, and yes, you could harden it, but your cell phone bill would go way up.
Oh.
So, you know, I mean, secure by design is a good way to go. Although there's a, you know, it's a balance about again, it comes down to the balance of security in this case versus money. The more money they spend on security, the more expensive your phone bill is going to be. But I guess there are steps, you know, that consumers can take and businesses alike, and that's enabling encryption. So, for instance, cell phone communications between cell phones, let's say Android, between an Android phone and an iPhone, text messaging is not secure by default. There is no encryption.
So there is no encryption on text messaging. No matter what you think, text messaging going from phone to phone, anybody can take a look at that ultimately with a little bit of work,
yes,
right?
It depends on the phones. iPhone to iPhone is secure if you're using iMessage, which is built into Apple. That bypasses the telcos. And Android to Android can be made secure if you're using a Google messaging app. The way to make all of those secure is there's a company, and I'm not endorsing this company, but it's free. and it's called Signal. And you can encrypt your voice and your text messages between phones. Now, both parties will have to have, you know, the sender and receiver would have to have the app, and that's
sure.
You know, prearranged through a text message, oddly enough.
But, okay, so that's one way you could text then without it being hackable, so to speak. That's not a bad idea if it's something sensitive. You know, if you're just text messaging, hey, honey, I'm coming home from work. What do you need some milk or something like that? You know, that's no big deal. So what, right? You know, but
yes.
But I think that that people just automatically look at the text message and think, you know, not all that much of it. People conducting business, lots of sensitive business conversations over text message. And that wouldn't be a good idea, would it?
I strongly suggest using encryption. You know, in the medical and dental fields and even other professionals, they encrypt emails. So email encryption is pretty easy these days. You just need to set up with the right provider and they can encrypt your email messages. But right now, the one thing that's really been concerning me, you know, thinking about how two-factor authentication, you know, like when you log into your bank and they send you a text message,
right.
Something you have, your cell phone, something you know, a password that's two factors. If those are coming over plain text, that could be intercepted. And then, you know, they almost have to be up on your phone knowing you're connecting or up on your
All right. Yeah. That's something, because a lot of times when I'm going into banks, credit cards, and anything that's really sensitive, I've enabled two-factor, and you're thinking that's pretty safe, right? Not a problem. You're thinking,
yeah. You
know, because I get a text message with the additional login code on top of that. But if someone's able to spoof you, they're able to then look at your login code, right? Your special login code, and off you go.
That's the one thing that I've been worried about. And so you can circumvent that by going back to email as the second factor, which is less secure than the app. So there's lots of apps out there. Google and Microsoft have apps, as well as Duo Mobile and others. So if your organization or whoever you're trying to log into offers the app, you're probably better off using the app.
Okay, what app are you speaking of? I'm sorry, I don't mean to be ignorant about that. What app?
Well, Google has a authenticator, as well as Microsoft has an authenticator.
One-time passwords, right? Those kind of things, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, those are more secure than the text message. That's what I was trying to get across.
All right. Yeah. Now I have one of those too. Yeah, and I really like that. And so they can't get into that to the same extent. That's good to know. Now, what about voice calls in general, Eric? How secure or insecure are they with our listening Chinese friends everywhere?
Yeah. Typically, voice calls are not encrypted. Again, Signal would use encryption on voice calls. Most telephone calls today, and business calls, don't use the old-time analog, plain old telephone service. They use voice over IP, mm-hmm. which essentially is just internet phone calls. I guess you could call it an internet phone system. That's really what they are. But those are not encrypted by default either. There are protocols in place to be able to encrypt those calls. But definitely, if the Chinese are actually... Now, so listening to phone calls is a much more data-intensive operation, but if they're in the system, they certainly could be listening to calls. We just don't know at this point. There's not enough information. So, again, Signal would be your easiest way to encrypt calls between cell phones. But even business calls, you should be... You know, I refrain from talking about, you know, or specifically giving passwords to anyone over the telephone, or by text message. Now, if it's iPhone to iPhone, I will do that occasionally and then have them change the password right away. But definitely want to use encryption whenever you're talking about or sending sensitive information, especially social security numbers, you know, any of that sensitive information.
Eric Engebretson, cybersecurity analyst, co-founder of Action Datatel in Southern Oregon. And by the way, what are your feelings about the security lockdown available on Windows 11? Are they doing a pretty good job in your view? Contrast that with maybe the Apple devices, because I know Apple devices, you know, have usually said, oh, we're morally superior, you know, to you Windows people. What do you think?
Well, I can tell you that for the most part, anybody that has, if you get physical access to a machine, especially now, Apple is a really difficult device to hack if you have physical access.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say that it can't be done. It can be. Anything's hackable. But Windows machines generally are if you get somebody gets physical access to the machine, they can probably get into it unless you're running encryption. Microsoft has a built-in encryption technology that should be enabled on machines that are going to store sensitive information, especially laptops. If you're traveling, you should always have encryption enabled on your laptop.
What's the performance penalty to encrypt your hard drive on a laptop?
Oh, that's a really good question. With today's modern processors and memory, actually, it's very minimal. You probably won't even notice it because there's so much available processing power on the modern technology, modern processors, and huge amounts of memory. Once it's encrypted, it's pretty easy to it's automated. So once it's encrypted, you don't have to deal with it anymore.
It's not like the old days. I remember, if you do this back in the 1990s, the 2000s, even the early 2000s, it really gummed up your machine. It slowed it down a lot. You noticed it.
It really did. Yeah. But we have the power of processing today is so phenomenal that, for the same money you spent 20 years ago, you can get two computers with, 100 times or 1,000 times the processing power.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Half the price and 4 to 5, 6 times the performance. That is for sure. All right. Eric, I really appreciate the take on this and something that I know everyone's focusing on the drones, but the bigger security risk for most people is probably what they're carrying around. Fair enough. That's really what you're talking about this morning.
Yeah, I just think, vigilance is king. So stay vigilant out there, my friends. Do what you can. You can't make it perfect, but don't step off over perfect, or don't step over good to go to perfect. Let's try to make it better than it is.
All right, very good. Action Data Tell, what's your website? People wanted to pop in with you.
It's actiondatatel.com, and if you want to read the blog article that I posted yesterday about China listening to cell phone calls, it's actiondatatel.com/blog, B-L-O-G.
All right. Great talk, Eric. I really appreciate you coming on the show, and keep me in the loop when you get that stuff going on, okay? Thank you.
I absolutely will, Bill. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Eric Angerbretson from Action Data Tell, 733 at KMED.
Freddy's Diner in Old Town Eagle Point is a
licensed, bonded, and insured for your peace of mind. Visit StephenWestfallRoofingInc.com today for your free estimate. CCB number 250730.
News Talk 106.3 KMED. You're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
David's here. David, you want to talk a little bit about that the Chinese hack on the phones that Eric Angerbritzen was talking about? How you doing?
Yeah, Bill, that's a great thing. I'm glad someone finally said it because thought I was imagining it. I keep hearing like Mandarin coming out of my phone. As if you think the Chinese are in my phone?
It could be. It could. You make me laugh, though, David. You really do. But probably, I don't know. Maybe with people like you and me, there's nothing really much to pay attention to. But I imagine if I were, working for a contractor here, some federal contractor here in Southern Oregon, we might be targets, right? Would that be fair? You think about something like that?
Oh, well, this is a thing I've known for a long time. And so the thing is, you don't really know what should be private till it's too late. And the thing is, you don't have any idea where this data is being compiled. You might get audited one year and you don't know why. And you realize it's because you're texting. You've texted all your business invoices over your phone, and they don't got to tell you. They just got to know they should snoop. But here's the point. I have a de-Googled phone, and it's so easy to get them and use them these days. And it's in my basic – I'm not a tech person, but in my basic research, it's the biggest thing you can do for privacy and security.
So the de-Googled phone, in other words, it's Android, but it's not – but it doesn't have all the Googleware thrown into it, right?
It tells you, hey, your Pandora wants to know where you're at and if you're running a fever.
I
want to tell Pandora about that.
Let me tell you, when it comes to location, it's astounding how many programs want to know where you are. Your laptop, your desktop, whatever it might be, your phone. It is astounding. And there's a part of me that wants to say, why do you need to know? But they ask, don't they?
Well, this phone I got, man, I'll tell you, I've had a de-Google phone. I've had a couple of them, but I've had one for almost 4 years, I think. And I'll tell you what, it is locked down. I don't worry about banking. I don't worry about anything on this phone.
Good. Well, good for you. And thanks for the suggestion. All right. Maybe we'll have to talk about that sometime. Get somebody on who knows their de-Googled phones. Okay. Thank you for that, David. Let me go to Francine. Francine, quick one here before news. How are you doing? What's on your mind, huh?
Oh, well, the gentleman that called, he's from England.
Yes. Yeah, that was, was Bernie, I have his name up here someplace, Bernie Mullen.
Bernie Mullen. Yeah. Everything he said, it was really good stuff. It was very heartfelt. But it was also extremely idealistic because we can't get to a place like that at this point in time until we cure the disease, the rot, the convoluted games that are being played.
I will agree with you that Bernie is very idealistic in his reimagining America's dream. And unfortunately, the part that we can't get past, and I don't think he's going to be really addressing that, is that there are competing worldviews. We don't agree on a lot of things.
Yeah, but I mean, that wasn't even my point. It's just that, you know, his thing, you know, wanting to get us back, you know, his whole vision of America and everything, it's extremely idealistic. And America and the entire world has sunk so far at this point in time. We have to really start scraping the crud out of the bottom of the barrel before we can fill it up with anything good again.
First things first, a deep flush, right? A deep flush.
I'm telling you, Bill.
I like that, Francine. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 7:38. Hey, coming up here, a deep flush needed in the healthcare system. I'm going to talk with an expert there, an attorney from the Pacific Legal Foundation, about why it is so difficult to get a doctor and get appointments here in Southern Oregon, the restriction of supply. We'll talk about that coming up.
106.3 KMED is the home for Kim Komando's Digital Minute, just after 8 a.m. weekdays on The Bill Myers Show and the Kim Komando
Drilling Company. And I'm on KMED.
So much of what we're dealing with these days when it comes to government inefficiencies is the government having to come up with another policy in an attempt to fix what the government caused with another policy. And boy, nothing is more policy ridden with trouble than the healthcare industry, for sure. And I wanted to talk with Jamie Cavanaugh about that. Jamie is legal policy counsel at Pacific Legal Foundation. Great organization, pacificlegal.org. She works with folks all around the country to end burdensome laws and create opportunities. So we're good with that. Jamie, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Thanks, Bill. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Jamie, I was looking at your background, your bio, and as a former litigator, you ended up fighting for the right to economic liberty, at the Georgia Supreme Court, and you ended the New Jersey ban on selling cottage food. That's pretty interesting stuff. Could you tell me a little bit about that battle? Because it is amazing how difficult it is for small people to start small and sell food out of their homes. Oregon, very restrictive. Other states like, let's say, Tennessee, where I have a friend that has built a baking empire out of their kitchen, not so difficult. What's going on with that?
Yeah, that's a great observation. You know, the laws on cottage food, which is just basically anything you can make at home and sell to the public, vary so much state to state. And yeah, a few years ago, I was involved with a lawsuit. I was representing the Home Bakers Association in New Jersey. New Jersey was the last state to ban the sale of homemade food to the public. And you'd have to rent a commercial kitchen, which means for small home bakers, you're carrying your ingredients back and forth.
Yep.
You get really weird times. You're working in the middle of the night. You can't be home watching your kids and also baking and earning a living and providing for your family. So New Jersey ended the ban, though its laws are still very, very restrictive, unfortunately. And sadly, the home bakers fought for 10 years before we even started litigation to try and change the law. So just like you said, some of these policies, it's so hard for, you know, individuals on the ground to try and fight these things.
Yeah, it just astounds me. A friend of mine, like I said, used to work here, now living in Tennessee. Wife started baking bread out of her home, and the laws there are quite relaxed. And now they have an incredible new business here that they're starting. They're getting bigger now. But, you know, you're not going to get a big business until you're making it easier for little ones to start. And that's really the focus of Pacific Legal, wouldn't you say, pretty much?
Exactly. Yeah, there's so many states that have revenue caps for home bakers, which is silly because kind of the size of a home kitchen will necessarily limit how much business you're doing in a year. And the revenue caps really prevent these entrepreneurs from ever making the leap to brick and mortar if that's what they want to do. But it kind of, you know, caps how much money they can do, how much business they can do. I have people who bake really intricate wedding cakes who tell me, you know, 4 months into the year, I've reached my cap and that's it. I can't sell anything else for the year.
Man, that's amazing. Well, we're going to take that same kind of issue here and take it into the medical care world. And one of the challenges with Oregon is that we have very few hospital beds when contrasted with our population. and also the second fewest rehab beds per capita, too. We've got a real problem, and you have written on this quite often over at Pacific Legal. It's once again the state of Oregon getting involved where it really shouldn't be sticking its nose. And what's causing this, you think?
So one of the big contributors is something called Certificate of Need laws, or people say con laws. But Certificate of Need laws prevent new healthcare facilities from opening or expanding unless you can prove to the government that your services are truly needed and that you can overcome the objections of the existing providers. So we like to call it a competitor's veto. The existing facilities and providers and big health systems know how to use these laws to prevent other facilities from ever, you know, opening in Oregon. And it's very harmful for patients.
I can't help but think about how many of the smaller hospitals, smaller community hospitals, have been purchased by, let's say, either Asante or Providence, right? Now, I like both of them, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're trying to tell me that in any particular town, if you wanted to open up a hospital or a medical care facility, I would have to go. Let's say I was a doctor and I wanted to go open up a clinic then or a hospital, just a hospital, let's say. I would have to go to Providence and Asante and get their permission, essentially. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. So, yes, it's a very bureaucratic application process. It's very expensive to go through. But the crux of it is that you're not just, you know, showing the government that you can provide a quality service. The government is asking your competitors to be involved in this application process as well.
Well, you know what we call that? Jamie, we call that rackets, okay? We used to call that, we would call that organized crime, you know?
Exactly. It's a cartel. You have to go ask your competitors for permission to compete with them in the market. And, you know, it doesn't make sense in any type of industry, but especially not healthcare, where we want providers to be offering new and innovative services. We want to incentivize providers to invest in Oregon.
Now, what is the purpose of a certificate of need besides, the people who are currently here like it because they can stop someone from coming into their territory, ultimately? Why? What's the purpose of it?
So it started when the federal government actually induced the states to adopt these laws in the 70s. The federal government said, we're spending too much on healthcare at the federal level, so maybe if we control the supply of facilities, that will reduce our spending, right?
Okay, what idiot came up? What idiot? No, hold on here. Wait a minute. Jamie, what kind of idiot came up with a plan that will control the price by making sure there are fewer of them available and that'll make it cheaper? Where does that ever happen?
Right. Obviously, we all know that basic economics tells us, you know, we need to have competition to have good prices for consumers. And The same is true in healthcare. Lots of people try and argue that's not true in healthcare, but there's lots of academic research that shows this is true. Now, to be fair to the federal government, after 12 years, it realized certificate of need laws were an abject failure. It said these are a disaster, and it repealed the federal mandate. Today, we have about 35 states that have some form of certificate of need laws for healthcare. Now, these can look very different. Oregon's certificate of need laws are very, very restrictive and apply to something like 40 different facilities or services. Some states, Montana only has one certificate of need law, and that's for long-term care or nursing home beds, basically. So there's a big, you know, breadth of these programs. Some states are very restrictive, and some states have abolished them altogether. So California, Texas, Pennsylvania, these are bigger states that have all repealed their certificate of need laws. And the research shows us those states have better access and cheaper prices.
Hmm. I would imagine, though, that certificate of need. Now, I'm asking for a speculation. And I know as a counselor, you probably like to deal with what you can prove. But is there any evidence that certificate of need laws exist because hospital systems probably donate to politicians? Is that a fair assumption or not?
I think it's totally fair to talk about that. I see evidence of that on the ground. Yes, I don't know of any, you know, academic research studies that have proven that, but there are studies that show in states where big hospitals are making political contributions, they're more likely to get a certificate of need. Because you have to remember, the existing facilities are also held back by these laws. So it's a double-edged sword for them. They don't want more competition, but if they want to expand their lines of services, they have to go through the same expensive process with a lot of uncertainty. And so there is evidence, there is a paper about how an increase in political contributions can increase their chances of getting a certificate for themselves.
Jamie, does it get that granular as, let's say, for example, I'm running a hospital and my hospital across town ends up doing a nice, really luxurious baby care place or a baby borning, baby nursery type of place. Would the other hospital, if they wanted to do a really expensive baby care sort of thing, have to then petition? Or is just improving an existing facility okay? I'm just curious how, because, you know, you see how the different hospital systems compete against one another and that kind of stuff sometimes.
Right. You know, expansions and renovations are sometimes covered. I think it often depends on the type of service that is being offered. You know, like basic remodel, you could probably do. But if you're kind of somehow offering a new service with this, with this expansion, then you would definitely have to go through the certificate of need process.
What about when a hospital system here in Southern Oregon built what we've nicknamed the cancer bunker, you know, in town? Would a big cancer treatment center fall under those certificate of needs, too? And you can't just put up a cancer treatment center unless someone gives you permission. Do you think that qualifies for that kind of behavior, too? Those restrictions?
Yes, absolutely. Now, when we're talking about big things with big investments, yes, that's when certificate of need laws apply. And now the original thinking was, hey, you don't want two hospitals to build around the block from each other, because if you did that, maybe they'd only both be half full, or they'd both be 40% full, and they wouldn't be profitable. And so then they would both close.
That but in reality, wouldn't they be competing with one another? And whoever is able to do it better for, you know, and keep customers satisfied would either find a way to get better, or they close too. I mean, what's wrong with that, ultimately?
Of course, of course. I agree with you 100%, Bill. And, you know, when we're thinking about these providers opening, they're acting like a business as well. They're looking at the market. They're deciding if it makes sense for them to open in a certain market or not. So they're not just, you know, blindly popping up next door to each other. But I just wanted to make the point that, yes, things with a high expenditure, a cancer center, something like that, would definitely have to go through the certificate of need process.
But if we wonder why it is so difficult sometimes to get a specialist or a specialty treatment of sorts, certificate of need laws probably have a lot to do with this.
Exactly. Yeah. The agency, you know, will literally say that they don't want duplication of services. Which is also called consumer choice. But,
you know, it just astounds me that they put this into the medical world, because if you try to do this to restaurants, in which you said, you know, I'm really sorry that you'd like to open up a restaurant here, but there's another restaurant already on that street, and there's no certificate of need for you to build your restaurant. People would laugh you out of the building, you know, if you try to make that claim. But we do this with the medical world. It's astounding, really.
And it's really, I think it's kind of paternalistic sometimes, or, you know, politicians or different people can talk down to the public and say, you don't understand, healthcare is too complicated, it's not a perfect free market. But obviously it still responds to free market pressures, and the people who are trying to keep these laws on the books have a vested interest in them. And on top of all of that, we can compare to the states that have already repealed these laws, and we see better outcomes for the patients there. So that should really be the bottom line. You know, those states have more access, have more facilities per capita, the facilities open and stay open, they have lower costs. So all of these things are what we should want for Oregon or any state with certificate of need laws still.
Jamie Cavanaugh, once again, is legal policy counsel with Pacific Legal Foundation. I noticed that it wasn't too long ago, a number of years ago, that a nonprofit ended up opening up an imaging center here in Southern Oregon. And it ended up being for a lot less money than what the hospital systems were charging for the same, you know, like CT scans, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And are there exceptions in that kind of world, in the nonprofit world? Of course, even the hospitals are technically nonprofit. Sometimes I get a little bit confused. I'm surprised why that didn't get squashed by the biggies. Wonder why.
Yeah, that's a great question, because that's the type of thing. So hospitals really fight to prevent imaging centers and surgery centers. Those are two of the big things that they say, those are the things we profit from. We want to charge $3,000 for a CT scan, you know, while the imaging center can do it for $500. And we need to protect our margins on those services. But those are the exact places where patients have really long wait times, need access to those services, where we should be making those services more available. You know, surgery centers outside the hospitals have better outcomes, have less readmissions, have less infection rate, lower infection rates, stuff like that. So again, it's from the patient and consumer standpoint, you want to have these non-hospital options for services.
Since Oregon has 40 different certificates of need in our laws right now, what would have to happen in order to bring the ability for people to bring more doctors and bring more treatment to people with, you know, arguably having more health problems as they age here? What could we do about that?
So some states are doing big reforms. In 2023, South Carolina repealed all of its certificate of need laws except nursing homes. Montana did that in 2021. Oklahoma did that in 2024. So states around the country are saying, hey, this is a problem. We have to get rid of these. But unfortunately, then in some other states like Oregon, it's much more difficult. Representative Lucetta Elmer brought a bill last year to try and repeal just a few services, mental health services, rehab services.
Yeah.
And I think substance use treatment facilities, all things that we would say, of course, we should have.
Oh, yeah. And that would make a lot of sense, Jamie, because here we're drowning in fentanyl and drug addicted, mentally ill homeless around here. And there's and people will say there's no place to put them or no place to send them. And certificate of need would seem to be a big part of that. Really?
Exactly. And for hospitals, they have the problem with boarding people, you know, people who stay long term in the emergency departments because they don't have somewhere else to discharge them to, mm-hmm. like an appropriate rehab center or a mental health facility. They just don't have the beds. And so they're also, you know, this is very dangerous for everyone then because now ER beds are being taken up for weeks, sometimes months. And that increases wait times in ERs. You know, it's just a host of, it's more expensive for the public. It's just a host of reasons that that's a bad outcome. So the hospitals should want more of these facilities available, but that bill was met with a lot of resistance, an extremely high amount of resistance. So even just to remove certificate of need for a couple things in Oregon is proving very, very difficult.
So what would actually help a lot of Oregon's medical system is actually some medical freedom, is what you're telling us ultimately.
Of course. And, you know, this isn't just me guessing or me saying what normal economic theory would predict. It's truly what the evidence shows. There's over 400 academic tests of certificate of need laws. I've been involved with a literature survey, and I know other academics who have done these, economists who have done these, and it, you know, the evidence is so one-sided. It's overwhelmingly showing how certificate of need laws lead to worse outcomes for patients.
Now, maybe Oregon can do the right thing after doing the wrong thing for a long, long time, from the sounds of it. So this is going to be a legislative action that's needed, or I guess a citizen initiative could do that, but those are a high bar, too. Where can we find out more about this, Jamie? Jamie Cavanaugh, once again, at Pacific Legal Foundation. You've written a lot on this.
I have. You can go to pacificlegal.org, like you mentioned earlier, and check out some of our ongoing cases challenging certificate of need laws around the country. There's a report called Conning the Competition that shows you exactly what certificate of need laws Oregon has. That's a report I wrote at a previous job, and it compares the certificate of need laws in every state, so you can kind of see, get an idea for the healthcare services that are regulated.
I really appreciate you coming on, and it's something that this is a scab that needs picked frequently until people understand it. They have to get it within them, and so listeners need to understand the reason why there are such long waits and why it's difficult to get care in many cases, and you can't find specialists, is that there's a restriction of the supply, and Oregon makes this as part of their law. And it's great if you're the provider, you know, because, you know, you're able to pretty much demand whatever price you would want, I suppose, here. Jamie Cavanaugh, thanks for the talk. Good information. We appreciate that. Be well.
Thanks, Bill. Take care.
Jamie Cavanaugh, Pacific Legal Foundation, and she's a legal policy counsel there, pacificlegal.org. Shade before 8 o'clock at KMED, KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford, KBXG Grants Pass.
Remember, we're just doing it right for you.
Fortunately, we were just talking about the challenges of medical competition being restricted. Well, in the insurance world, there is insurance competition. There really is. It helps, though, to have an agent that is able to work on your behalf and find the best deal. There's been a lot of problems. You know about some of the nightmares. People get those renewal notice coming in, and they pass out when they look at the email or open up the envelope. You know how that goes. So instead of passing out and knocking your head, we don't want to do that. Talk to Steve Yancey. Steve Yancey at Sky Park Insurance. He's an independent, has been working here a long time in Southern Oregon, knows a lot of people, works with a lot of different companies. And just call him to get a quote. on your various insurance needs. 261-5444, 261-5444. Doesn't have just one company, many companies that work with him. And it's worked pretty well for me and a lot of other KMED KBXG listeners. 261-5444. And he's also brought on another great person, Lynn Barton at Sky Park. Her number is 499-0958, 499-0958. And she works the issues with all the complexities of the Medicare plans and the supplemental programs. 499-0958 at Sky Park Insurance, skyparkins.com.
Sweetwater Sanitation are your experts in the sanitation business. With over 20 years of providing septic services in Southern Oregon, Sweetwater Sanitation gets the job done the right way. Sweetwater Sanitation can inspect, service, repair, and pump your septic tank so you can focus on enjoying time with friends and family and not a septic disaster. Give them a call at 541-821-1426 or check them out online at swsmodoc.com. Sweetwater Sanitation, their service is the difference.
It's amazing. What's right under your floor can impact your whole house. Musty smells, wall cracks, uneven floors, doors and windows that stick. These could all be your home sending you warning signs that there's a problem. But one simple call can be the answer to fixing everything under your home. For more than a decade, Terra Firma has been our area's number one solution for better basements, foundations, and crawl spaces. So why waste another day worrying? Make an investment in a more healthy, more valuable home. Call Terra Firma today.
Visit GoTerraFirma.com.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
Couple minutes after 8, KMED, KMED, HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. We're going to check Town Hall News in just a moment, and then Dr. Dennis Powers will return, and we're going to have a little conversation on where past meets present. We're going to be profiling the 1997 New Year's flood in Southern Oregon, and I can still remember that like yesterday. And it led to a lot of changes, both in emergency messaging and what the first responders were up to also here in Southern Oregon. So we'll have a little conversation about that, where we're heading with Trump, the drone world. And I'm really curious to talk to the good doctor about this George Stephanopoulos ABC $15 million deal. How many more of these lawsuits does he think we're going to see? Because they were reporting what George Stephanopoulos was talking about pretty unquestioningly, too. The defamation case went in Trump's favor. They wrote a $15 million check to him over the weekend. Just amazing. I mean, it's a much bigger story than I think the mainstream media is talking about.